You are listening to episode number 68 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast, sponsored by the Boston Bruins Stanley Cup Championship win.
You?
And actually, we're not sponsored by the Boston Bruins, but if it'd be cool. I wouldn't be living in this freaky dick hole if I was. You are listening to episode number 68 of the Mighty Warriors 2 Marvel Podcast, once and always, forever will be. I am your host, Ben. Joining us, Taser.
Hello, how you doing?
Muppets have invaded Taser's body. And joining us, the man whose city has finally reclaimed the Stanley Cup from the Great White North, Brian. Brian, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, baby, go Bruins! And by invading Taser's body, do you mean someone has their hand up his ass, or like, how does that work?
No, like Kermit's physically inside of him.
No, he has his hand up my ass.
Working his mouth like a puppet.
You know, why do you think it sounds so good? Brian is going to be reviewing a Canadian book, so there you go. Take that sense of irony.
I dedicate this to you, Mav, and I'll dedicate it again when I actually get there, but we'll do that.
All right, if this is your first time listening to us, we are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel, which is video games, movies, toys, comics. We just did a special edition for X-Men First Class. We've done a special edition for Thor and Iron Man 2. You can check those out if you want. Just scroll down. But here we're going to talk about the comics and the news and comics from Marvel. And the first thing we're going to talk about is probably the one that carries the least weight, which is we finally got our first sense of Avengers promotion at a summer retail. I can't remember exactly where it's at, but a photo was leaked online of a matte painted image of the Avengers, of the first Avengers movie poster, which shows Captain America in a new updated costume, the Hulk, Black Widow, Hawkeye in his Ultimates uniform, mind you, Iron Man, and, of course, the God of Thunder, Thor. Now, obviously, the big summer movie of 2012 outside of Batman is going to be the Avengers movie, which I'm pretty sure most Marvel fans are getting excited. And the fact that we only have one more movie really to get through in Captain America later this year, and it's actually going to happen. So, looking, and you can look at this image at our website, www.thewarriors2.com. Looking at this image, it gives that ultra sense of, wow, this is actually happening, you know? The only thing bigger than this would be to see the Justice League movie, like an actual live-action movie. The fact that we're getting an Avengers fucking movie, are you kidding me? And obviously the biggest note that they didn't use, outside of Chris Hemsworth, Jeremy Renner, and Scarlett Johansson, Hulk, Hulk looks like Hulk. You can't tell if his, like, as I know in Hulk, whenever they would do a Hulk movie, they would get a little bit of the actor's face, but it just looks like a raging monster. Cap's face is covered, and Iron Man's face is covered, but I guess Iron Man's face sells more than Robert Downey Jr.'s face, you know. So,
well, that's debatable.
Well, I mean, for little kids' birthday parties, they want to see Iron Man and not Robert Downey
Jr. Yeah, middle-aged women?
Well, yeah, but who's buying birthday party plates? Middle-aged women.
Yeah, there you go.
But who's using the birthday plates?
Yeah, I know. You just kind of helped my point, and then you kind of went back on it. So.
All right, whatever. Whatever. Suck. Canada sucks, and so does hockey. I don't know. It gives that ultra. Last year we got that little teaser image of the big A, and Samuel Jackson saying the classic Avengers thing, a day like any other day. You know, blah, 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 blah. So this just makes it one step closer to being real, to seeing something I don't think most Marvel fans or comic fans in general would ever thought they would see. Granted, this isn't an all-star cast. It's not, but it's an all-star cast of superheroes joining forces together for the first time on the big screen. But I mean, if you look, just to claim notice, since I'm noticing, they're going to go with the Ultimates uniform for Hawkeye. We've already seen Black Widow's costume, and apparently Captain America's going to get an updated costume for this movie.
Thank fucking God.
So, and it looks a lot more, the wings look like they come out a little bit more, which is interesting because I didn't, that kind of looks kind of retarded, but whatever.
What is Captain America with those wingtips, huh?
Well, I mean, in comics it works fine, but if you look at things in real life, it kind of looks kind of retarded. Like,
yeah, I know, but you know, I'm not sure
Ultimate right without it.
Yeah, but I mean, they don't need to stick out. Like, they could be in the side of the helmet, but it just looks a little, you know, much like if a Flash movie was ever made, the little things on his side of his head, it just look weird. It would just look weird. But I don't know. This just has me more excited in the fact that this is actually happening. And I'm pretty sure it's shooting right now. But let's, Taser, what are your thoughts on this?
Yay! Yay, yay, and more yay! I'm eagerly looking forward to this movie coming out. I sit here tapping my feet in anticipation. I can't tell you how big the smile on my face is right now that words do not describe. So, bring it on. I'm counting days, literally.
All right.
It's that simple.
Brian, what about you? I'm pretty sure you're just as excited as me and Taser are.
Oh, yeah, I'm completely excited by this. I'm ready to see this movie, you know, put up on the big screen, ready to be, ready to enjoy it. But I found myself asking a couple questions. Nothing really I need to voice right now, but one thing I do want to wonder, though, is I want to know if we're going to be getting a villains poster. I'm not sure if there's as many villains, but I want to know if we're getting a villains poster anytime soon, because if we are, that would just be fantastic.
Well, I mean, at this point in stage, we don't even know who the villains are. I mean, the rumor
we is... We can guess.
Loki. But as a side guy, and we know the Cosmic Cube is going to come into effect.
Even so, we should get at least like the Ten Rings organization from Iron Man, the terrorist cell, or maybe even like Hydra from Captain America.
I think you can release this image now, but I think it's way too early to release like who the villain's gonna be. We're gonna get that eventually.
No, I completely agree with that. I just want to know if we're gonna get a villain poster anytime soon or leading up to
the release. If I may, you know what would be nice? If
Black Widow naked? I was thinking that, too.
Black Widow and Wasp caught naked. You know, with Black Goliath. Whoa! But no, seriously, what would be sweet is this movie is where they discover Captain America and they somehow work Hydra into it, you know? And, of course, that means the Red Skull would be, would be the big bad.
I thought you hated the idea of the Red Skull. Never mind, wrong thing.
It would be kind of cool if they brought in, like, I don't know for any of you captains out there, but if they brought in, like, Alexander Lucan as a descendant of the original, that would be kind of cool. I would be open to seeing something like that.
Yeah, I hear that.
I would explain how you get a Red Skull and you still get the Red
You can make him a rival industrialist Tony Stark, a villain for Captain America, and
Baron Zemo.
That too, Baron Zemo.
You know, Baron Zemo's always been a problem for me. He's like, well, at least the junior. You know, the first one, yeah, for the time period, okay, fine. His son, on the other hand, was, oh, you defeated my father. My father was never the same, so I hate Captain America. Rawr! Fuck you. You know, Baron Zemo Jr. just, unoriginal and boring.
Well, that doesn't have to be his characterization in the movie.
That's true. No, you got a point. But I don't see them doing anything different because, let's face it, it's Hollywood. Hollywood wants shit to be as simple as possible, which is why we got Green Lantern. But,
Oh, wow.
Tell me I'm wrong.
I haven't seen it, so I can't say you're wrong yet. But
Ben, tell me I'm wrong.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Thank you. All right, there you go. But, no, if it's as simple as possible, it's easier to accept. It's easy to get the, you know, rake in any profits and, you know, hopefully avoid any complaints. And they can get the next one rolling because that's really what they want to do. You know, comics are the new mythologies. This is where they're starting to pull a lot of the ideas for movies for because, you know, let's face it.
There's a shit ton of stories.
Yeah, that, and they're running out of ideas. They really are. So
yeah,
keep it as simple as possible, and hey, you know, let's go.
Inception was pretty amazing. That was an original.
How come I can't fight like that? Jesus, I'm sorry. I'm watching Mortal Kombat versus Liu Kang, and it's such an awesome fight. Anyways,
flash of light equals uppercut epicness.
Keith Cook kicks ass. That's all I gotta say.
The one thing I do have to notice, and I hope it changes by the time this movie actually comes out, no Wasp, no Giant Man.
I could do without those two.
I know you can, Wasp.
But I'm a fan of both.
Well, not Wasp, especially if they get someone like hot to play. That'd be pretty amazing.
I mean, even if it was Asian Wasp, like they made her Asian in the Ultimates,
and
a mutant. Which, with Mark Millar being a dumbass, but whatever.
Well, no, you know what? That wouldn't be bad. I could see that happening, and it's at least it's a good update to the character, and it's a good reason to actually have an Asian who isn't a martial artist or a magician. You know, something non-stereotypical. She's a mutant who can change into a bitty.
She's also unreasonable good at math.
I don't think they would.
Good at math.
I mean, the thing is, like, they're not in this initial lineup, and that disappoints me. I mean, Hank Pym isn't a founding, and Wasp are founding Avengers. I mean, I guess they're substituting them for Black Widow and Hawkeye, which, granted, they're much more interesting characters, but as a fan of Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne, it's kind of like I wish they were in this movie. I mean, they're part of the original Avengers.
Maybe we'll get, like, a little cutaway in Avengers where they're recruited right then and there.
I hope so. As a fan of those characters, I hope so.
Yeah, they could get it done like a la the Ultimate Avengers animated movie. They could do something like that, you know, just a quick cutaway, get them in, that's that.
All right. But let's move on to something else, in that over the course of several years, the Avengers have been around since, I believe, the mid-60s?
Yeah, around there.
The Avengers book, not the British TV show. And a lot of characters have had the distinction of being called Avenger. You know, it'd be too many to list them all. But the one character, besides Spider-Man, who joined back in 2004, the one character who never joined, who, yeah, team up every now and then, but was never an official Avenger, was Daredevil, a.k.a. Matt Murdock. And, of course, we all know the recent events of Shadowland and that atrocity that was.
Oy vey.
It turns out, in New Avengers number 16... we all know Daredevil is returning, a new Daredevil number one by Mark Waid, Paulo Rivera, Marcus Martin book is coming, but also Daredevil is now joining the new Avengers with Spider-Man, Wolverine, Mockingbird, and company. Jessica Jones. Now, this is really controversial. Daredevil has always been the loner. Sure, Spider-Man has, but he... Daredevil hardly ever teams up with these guys. I don't think of Daredevil as the guy who would be an Avenger. It just doesn't fit, you know. And maybe this is what people were saying about Spider-Man and Wolverine back when the New Avengers formed. But Wolverine was an X-Man. He's used to being surrounded by teams. He's the perfect asshole of the group. Spider-Man has fought with Captain America and Iron Man and all these guys for years. Daredevil has just been patrolling Clinton. I mean, Hell's Kitchen. He just doesn't... I think it's going to feel weird him being an Avenger, you know? And plus, he was a fucking murderer a couple months ago. I don't know if they remember that or not.
Everyone's murdered at least once or twice in the Marvel Universe. It's not really that big a distinction.
And took over half of Hell's Kitchen.
No one cares about Hell's Kitchen anyway.
I guess, but I mean, I don't know. He just doesn't seem to. I mean, he's the guy. This week I recently read The Man Without Fear, which is the unofficial or the official origin of Matt Murdock.
Right,
Of him become Daredevil, and his whole thing is. He can never break the rules. He can, you know, he's afraid to talk, if he gets too close, or something bad's gonna happen. You know, it just doesn't seem to fit. Even when he was initially asked to join the New Avengers back in 2004, he said no. I want to know, and we're probably going to find out when it happens, what changed? Why is Captain Steve looking aside the fucking Shadowland thing? How the hell did he redeem him? Because I
think that's all part of the story.
I mean, could be, but I mean, Cap is a pretty big fucking hypocrite these days.
Bitched out Tony Stark a while back. That was kind of uncalled for.
I mean, I don't know. Taser, you go, because I'm not sure how I feel about Daredevil joining the New Avengers.
Well, I'll say it like this. When it comes to the Avengers, just about everybody gets a shot. So this is really, you know, another in a long line of, hey, who hasn't been here lately? Or ever? That guy! I hate to sound very taserish, but I don't care. You know, I haven't been interested in Daredevil in a long time. That whole mess with Shadowland, I just... What the fuck ever? I'm not even sure exactly what Matt Murdock's legal status is right now. I don't know if he's actually still a lawyer, and I don't care.
I think being possessed by some kind of extra world demon kind of gets you disbarred, I would think.
Maybe, but you know what? If Lex Luthor can attack Metropolis, let everybody know he did it, and then grow a clone, haul it into court and say, that's the guy that does it, and then get elected president of the United States? Matt Murdock can take and go, yeah, I was bad, okay now.
And plus, Daredevil's secret identity is the worst-kept secret in the Marvel Universe.
Well, he was, I think, probably the first big-name hero in the Marvel Universe to actually lose it. You know, Fantastic Four never had it. Peter Parker, one person might find it every once in a while. Cap...
Everybody knows.
No. Cap held his for a long time.
No. But I'm saying now, recently. I'm saying like now.
No, well, even before though, there was that.
Well, Steve Rogers isn't Cap now, is he?
Well, no, but fair enough. But before then, Daredevil lost his a while back in that whole mess with Karen Page and freaking Kingpin.
Yeah, back in Brubaker's run, Kingpin got out a while back.
You know. Because we talked about this last week, you didn't give a shit about Daredevil. The original where Kingpin outs him is Born Again. That's what I mean.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the first time it happened. You know? They've been basically repeating the same Daredevil story.
It's like, which shows this is the 14th characters, time this you know? Week that you've come
well,
forward
yeah,
saying
yeah.
Daredevil.
And I be perfectly honest, with I started paying attention to Marvel crap. What was it? Avengers Disassembled. And in that, I was completely flabbergasted to find out that Tony Stark was Secretary of Defense. He was addressing, what was it, the U.S. Security Council in armor without the helmet. Yeah. What the fuck is this?
I'll take that over Teenage Tony, though. I mean, come on.
Okay, not arguing that, but I'll say this. The notion of a secret identity is kind of dying out. And if you pay attention, you can see it.
Yeah, that but being there's, said, I mean, well, let's... I mean, this is off topic, but Spider-Man still had... I mean, not now that the retcon happened, not everybody remembers.
Only because you get more drama from Peter Parker doing his best to keep his identity.
Well,
you get way more drama, which sales and emo people loving the book. That's why.
I mean, let's go this. When Bucky, it was revealed that Bucky was Captain America, the Winter Soldier, people lost their shit and he was thrown into court. So it was.
What happened with that?
Oh, he's going to. Apparently, he's going to. Well, did you refere itself?
Yeah, I did, and I don't know if that makes a difference now because
he got butt raped by a Red Skull's daughter.
I saw that. I didn't read the issue, but I think in the next issue he might escape or something or some shit like that. I'm not reading it, but that's what I'm hearing.
He might escape to go through what he went through in Fear itself.
I guess so.
Pretty much, yeah.
Hey, you know what?
He's a glut for punishment.
He didn't have to get on that rocket when Steve was chasing it.
No, he did so because he's a good American.
Oh, no, he's an idiot. Anyways, made him turn into a communist. Anyways, I think the secret identity thing is still there. But the point is, I don't think Matt Murdock should be an Avenger. Not so soon after Shadowland, you know?
Okay, I'll agree with that. I'll agree with that.
Fearless, any thoughts?
Nothing that has already been said. So.
All right. Although, hold on, if they can accept Red Hulk, then why they can't take in Daredevil.
We're going to be talking about Red Hulk with our Book of the Week and Avengers.
Oh, actually, there's one thing I wanted to point out. With Daredevil joining an Avengers team, this pretty much eliminates any other person who's pretty much never been an Avenger. I just kind of realized that. Well, any major hero.
D-Man? No, even D-Man was an Avenger.
Yeah, so. Yeah,
there you go.
Wait, is Squirrel Girl on the team? Is she on the team?
She's the babysitter, but I don't think that counts.
I think it kind of counts, sadly.
She was on the West, the Great Lakes Avengers.
Oh, okay, then. So yeah, I mean, she's not a good Avenger, but she was an Avenger.
All right. Point is, I mean, like even in some alternate Marvel futures, like there's a whole banner
this
the Avengers.
This single event away everything that made the Marvel Knights cool and edgy. The fact that they were loners. Now every Marvel Knights person has been an Avenger at least once.
Yeah.
Disappointing.
Well, it's not like he doesn't have to. It's not like he's going to be Avenger all the time. He still has a solo book. Anyways, split decisions on this. I don't know. I'm sure going to be picking the new Daredevil number one by Mark Waid, because that's going to be awesome. It looks like it's going to be a lighter tone Daredevil. But let's move on to our last piece of news. In that, Neil Adams, man behind Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Hard Traveling Heroes, did a long run on Avengers. He actually did Uncanny X. He actually did X-Men way before it went to the shit and went into reprints for about 3 years. He's one of the legendary artists of all time, you know. He's a name you'll hear. He can't do a lot of work now, but I believe he's 70. 68 or 70. I know he's pretty up there. And he's actually going to be announced to be drawing a new Avengers 16.1. Again, Marvel's doing these 0.1 issues. They're going to continue even further. And apparently this story is going to be the return of Norman Osborn to the Green Goblin. And if you've been reading up New Avengers, and at least in the recent arc, Hammer has slowly started to form itself again as a renegade group. Because I don't think S.H.I.E.L.D. technically exists anymore. More as Cap's just ordering the Avengers around. So Hammer is starting to form himself. But the big news is, again, Neil Adams drawing it. And Neil Adams drew part of the Kree-Skrull War, if I'm not mistaken. You know, that was early in his career, but he still drew it. So he has Avengers ties. It's going to be interesting to see how his style, his take on these modern heroes, because most of his projects that he's done, if you look at Batman Odyssey, if you even read it, it's very much in the past. A previous part of Bruce Wayne's life that's not modern, and this is going to be a modern story. I'm just excited it's fucking $2.99. It's going to be a lot of pages, and it's Neil fucking Adams, and he can draw circles around most artists working today. Fucking Van Sciver. Anyways, Brian, are you excited for Neil Adams drawing New Avengers 16.1?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Neil Adams, of course, is one of the all-time greats. I mean, if you don't know his name and you're a comic fan, you kind of be ashamed of yourself a little bit. But as far as this goes, I'm excited for him, you know, because who better to bring on a book that needs revamping than one of the all-time proven artists of pretty much any company, you know? I mean, Neil Adams, his style is, it foreshadows the older style, I guess, if that makes any sense. He kind of has like an old school feel to his art, but he can still make it seem like fresh and new and keep you entertained while looking at his art. And from some of the preview art that we've seen, some of the interiors we've seen, it really does look like solid work. And it looks like he hasn't missed a beat in, you know, all the years since he started. And I can't say that I'm extremely excited for this, because honestly, I haven't read a lot of stuff with his work in it. But I can say that I know the name, I know his skill, and I know that given a chance, he will make this book, you know, he'll make it sing, basically. He'll make this book that you really just want to look at it, and, you know, you'll value what the artwork is. So I am very pleased with the decision to make Neil Adams the artist on this book, as I hope he does a good job with it.
All right, Taser, you were 20 years old when Neil Adams was doing Green Lantern, Green Arrow, and Batman, and all those other books. Are you excited that this guy's returning to draw interiors again?
No. Oh shit. I enjoyed Neil Adams' art mostly for when he did his continuity stuff on like Megalith and Armor, which are two comics I know you two have never heard of. I didn't get it. Yeah, exactly. Don't get me wrong. I like Neil Adams' art. The stories from that run of Green Lantern with Green Arrow were humanistic and, you know, kind of tanked the character a bit, but still it was compelling. You know, you read it, it was interesting, it was different. But insofar as art-wise, yay. Okay, and so, yeah, it's Neil Adams. He's going to do a book. Ooh, yeah, the guy's been around for, you know, freaking 35 years, whatever. But so, I'd say the same thing if it was
62.
John Byrne.
He's been around since 62.
Okay, even further than that then. But even still, so, I'm not... him coming to a book doesn't jazz me. And him coming to this book, which I don't really care that much about, it's kind of meh all around. I mean, I hope, you know, I like his art. I hope whoever's into this book, I hope they enjoy it, but I don't care.
All right. Well, you know what? This is going to be my call. Todd McFarlane, if Neil Adams at 70 can come back and draw an issue, your ass at 45 should be able to come out and draw an issue. Come on, Todd. Get your shit together. Anyways, let's move on. Enough of the news. We'll move on to the book of the week, which we are right in the middle of Fear Itself. A lot of Fear Itself tie-ins came in this week. But the one we're going to be talking about, our book of the week, was Avengers number 14. Now, Bendis is still using the framing device of sort of interviewing the Avengers, which, you know, it depends on if you like that device or not. I happen to like it.
It's getting tired.
Not to me, because I didn't read all those oral history things. I kind of just...
No, I didn't either.
I really enjoyed the introspective in the first issue. I didn't like it as much in this issue, but it was still enjoyable. But sort of the overall framing device of this issue is, how do you prove yourself to be an Avenger? You know, you just know. And how none of the Avengers trusted the Red Hulk until he proved himself. And basically, from what we get, is in the issue 3 of Fear Itself, the Thing was chosen to be one of the worthy to be Angerer, and he destroyed the Yancey Street, as we saw in Fear Itself number 3. And in this issue, Red Hulk tries to stop him, and basically it's one big fight scene. You know, it's a Hulk Thing fight, but the Thing got a major power up. And sort of the thing I liked about it is how you saw the Avengers side-by-side commentary and how, you know, he lost Johnny Storm and now he's possessed by this thing and he's wreaking havoc, which I'm pretty sure he has no control over it. It's just this God thing controlling him. And you kind of feel bad that people are idiots, are going to perceive him as a destroyer, as the evil guy. I don't want to say it that simple, but an evil doer. And he basically destroys Avengers Tower, which I know a lot of people say we've seen that before, but this is the Thing who did it, you know, and whether it was, and it was unwillingly, people are still going to be seeing it as him. The Thing has never been a guy, he may lose his shit, but he's not going to destroy Avengers Tower or the Baxter Building, you know. He just wouldn't. So to see that, I think, adds an extra emotional weight to it. And you can see it in John Romita Jr. drawing the faces, and that they know it's going to haunt Ben Grimm for the rest of his life, that he did this. You know, even though unwillingly, it was still his actions. But of course, the remaining of this issue is Ross, or Red Hulk rather, fighting with this overpowered Thing and gets golf kit across, and apparently they never see the Red Hulk again. And that's basically what it was. Which a lot of, like, if you when you read the event, when you read the issue, it says that's where the Red Hulk proves himself that he was an Avenger.
I call bullshit on that, quite frankly.
Well, I get it. I don't know. I can see it. Why do you call bullshit? Let's go ahead and get that out of the way right now.
Yeah. Well, okay. First of all, I buy that, you know, Ross is trying to redeem himself and his past acts as Red Hulk, and I remember all the other shit he did when he was General Ross. You know, I get he's trying to redeem himself, but to say him trying to stop Boost, you know, Power Amp thing, oh yeah, that right there makes him an Avenger.
Well, it was just him by himself, and because all the it was just him, and he was I mean, the thing was obviously more powerful than him, you know.
Yeah.
And I just think the fact that he was willing to sacrifice anything for it, and that proves him to be an Avenger, and when a lot of people didn't trust him, and I think that's what it is.
I don't know. Oh, okay. I don't know. It just bothered me. I understand it. It just rang hollow to me. You know, like, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that right there. Ooh. Not all the other stuff that he did when they were fighting freaking the Hood trying to get the Infinity Gems, but that right there. And oh, he didn't come back. That is an adventure. Ah, fuck you. I'm sorry. Suck a dick, really. Excuse my French.
The one thing I want to have to talk about is, again, I don't know what's happening to JRJR, but again, this week I got Daredevil, The Man Without Fear, and you look at the two books, and yeah, it's decades apart. It's about almost a decade apart, but it doesn't even look like the same guy anymore. Like, the style, like, the sort of blockiness is there, but in sort of the rendering...
I think the colors really...
I think it's the inker, to be honest with you.
The color is a bit sharper.
I don't know. It just like it's JRJR, but it's not. You know what I mean? It's JR. It's him. It's obviously him, but it doesn't feel like his old self. It doesn't look like his old what it used to be. You know,
doesn't look like the previous books that he's put out.
Whatever, man. Just art.
If you're no, because JRJR is my favorite artist, and I don't like seeing one of my favorites. You know, I'm not accusing him of half-assing it at all. I honestly just think it's a lot on his plate, and he's mostly been a guy who's done single characters. He did a run on Uncanny X-Men a long time ago, but that was like in the 80s, you know? So I don't know. Maybe it's time for to take JRJR off this book and find another artist, or give him a whole 6-issue arc to take a break, because from what I understand, Chris Bachalo was supposed to do the Fear Itself tie-ins, and Chris Bachalo is out by issue one. After the first issue, so I don't know, but overall, I have to give this a solid. I give it a 3.8. It was very good, very entertaining. It was a good tie-in, you know. It was nice to see what the thing didn't do anything special other than blast some things, and break Avengers Tower, which again, I already said why I like that moment particularly. It was a good comic book. I'm looking forward to the next issue. Brian, what are your thoughts on this issue?
Okay, so we get more, you know, upfront camera talk and whatnot. There were some things I like about this. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot, because once you got out of the whole interview process, basically you just get a lot of hoo-ah, hoo-ah, boom, boom, bang, and stuff like that. No, there wasn't a lot of dialogue outside of the whole camera, you know, view. But from what I read, I mean, I enjoyed it. One thing I particularly enjoyed was it's when the Red Hulk goes to first confront Ben Grimm, and he's like, put the hammer down, surrender, and Ben Grimm's like, do you really think this house is going to go? He's just like, I had to ask. Basically, fight ensues. Red Hulk gets hit. You know, he's on the ground. He's bleeding. He's all kinds of shit fucked up. And, you know, Ben Grimm was always kind of like, you know, beg me to, you know, let you live. And he's like, not going to beg. He's like, I had to ask. And he rips him just across New York and just goes. I particularly enjoyed the little parallel, but that was just me. I did like how they were all kind of like, you know, this is Ben Grimm, why is he doing this, you know, because Ben Grimm really is, despite what people may think, he is pretty much one of the biggest softies in the entire Marvel Universe. I mean, you ever read a Fantastic Four book, you see him just hanging out with Franklin and Val, and he's just like, he's basically just...
He's a lovable uncle.
He's a giant rock-hard-skinned teddy bear, basically, is what he is. And it's just, it really is. It's heartbreaking to see him just... first he loses Johnny, and now he has to go through all this shit where he's not even doing his own thing. He's going to look back on him, like you said, and he's going to be all pissed because it wasn't him, but it was him. That's going to cause more internal turmoil. And Red Hulk, I don't know, I find it hard to care about Red Hulk just personally because I really haven't read anything with him outside of this, and
the whole point is that Ross, like Taser said, that Ross is trying to redeem himself. Like, that's the whole point.
Right. Well, still, you know, it's not that I really just don't particularly care about him. I do like how he always responds to him, though. Like, one moment I liked is when Hawkeye is kind of like, you know, I can't really say I don't like him because, you know, when I wasn't put on the team, I was kind of controversial. I was a criminal, you know, and I get that and stuff like that that keeps me buying this book, but the main thing I'm trying to say here is it's hard for me to care about Ross because I agree with Taser. I don't think that making any kind of last stand automatically makes you an Avenger. That's bullshit. I mean, you have to go through a whole lot more shit before you can be called an official Avenger or be accepted by the team. I mean, sure, you stop the Hood, that's great, but truth be told, probably would have got it done without the Red Hulk. They probably could have found a way. I'm not saying that it definitely would have gone through, but I'm saying there's a good chance it could have gotten along without the Red Hulk being on the team. And this whole thing, there was really just no point to it because Ben Grimm still wrecked shit up. He still knocked out Avengers Tower. He still kicked Red Hulk's ass. He's still going to lay waste to New York. So there was really no point to this other than the fact to say, hey, here's Red Hulk. He's important. Ooh, you know, it's just, I don't really buy into it all that much. But I still kind of like the issue. Wasn't exactly crazy about it, but I'll give it a 3 out of 5. I wasn't that crazy about it.
All right, Taser, we already know your negative thoughts. Any other thoughts on this issue?
Sorry. I don't know. On the one hand, I really liked...
Dude, is something wrong with your mic?
Sorry. How's that?
That's
on the one hand, I really liked how Romita rendered this fight. I mean, it was brutal. You know, it was massive. It looked like it was just all about power. You know, and simply looking at it, I this is probably his best art to date, and I haven't liked a lot of it, which is why I kind of stopped reading the book. But this is what happened here was and sure enough, he kicks it up a notch when you see how Ben takes out the tower. Now, admittedly, him dropping that big-ass building down in Manhattan, you know, that was a bit lackluster when we see how it's, you know, how it plays out. I was kind of waiting for, like, big destruction, you know, big-ass building falling down, and it toppled. You know, it freaking toppled, but, all right, fine, it didn't happen. But, no, I dug this book, you know, I really did. And admittedly, the whole Avenger interviews interspersed with, you know, the action, what happened to Ross, you know, when he fought Ben Grimm Elevated, or whatever you want to call him, that was well done. You know, it worked together.
Anger is the name of the guy, of the Worthy, so.
Fuck it. Fuck that. I'm calling
him. No, I thought it was the Breaker of Souls.
Well, Anger, the Breaker of Souls, yeah.
I'm calling him Ben Grimm Boosted, damn it. Anyway.
he's like Power Rangers Battleizer.
Yeah, right.
Except instead of like armor, he gets like vagina tentacle monsters from Japan on his back and shit. I don't know.
When Ben flew up, that right there, I just kind of went, oh shit, this is gonna be good. Yeah, I dug the part with Hawkeye talking about how, well, you know, I was a bit controversial when I showed up, and, you know, so far be it for me to really, you know, put down anybody else, blah, 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 blah. Carol, on the other hand, seemed a bit flippant about it, and it seemed her what she had to say and Spider-Woman's offerings, it seemed kind of like it was a round table rather than them discussing one-on-one with whoever was behind the camera, but all right, I digress. Jarvis's words at the end, okay, I remember when the Masters of Evil stormed the Avengers Mansion and when Jarvis got the shit kicked out of him royally. So he was very effective in making me think back there and go, oh, yeah, that was actually a pretty serious time. Damn. So now I can feel why he was saying what he was saying about this point in time. Overall, the book had its desired effect on me. I really liked it. I have to give this one. I'll give it a 4.2 Warriors out of 5.
That's higher than me. That's all right. I'm gonna go with and The Fear Itself continues with Invincible Iron Man number 505, Fraction and LaRocca continuated thing. Basically, this issue is sort of a split between a fight scene and a lot of character development. It opens up the issue lying with Tony Stark lying on a sea of rubble, which is actually the citizens of Paris, potentially all of them. It's never said if it's all of them or not, but it certainly looks like it. And ensues a huge fight scene between the Grey Gargoyle, or this enhanced Grey Gargoyle, and Tony Stark. And Tony Stark confronting something that he can't explain with science, technology, you know, math, anything. He's sure he's hung around with Thor all those times, but past writers, I don't think, have confronted that. You know, Tony Stark's a man of the future. He's a man of reasoning. He's a man of explaining everything, how everything works, and how do you explain gods? How do you explain all this, you know? And, you know, sort of the God of Fear's power is that he can make you afraid, and I think this is his influence becomes stronger, because Tony Stark, at the end of this, close to the quarter of this issue, he gets the shit knocked out of him. His armor's cracked by this hammer, which you think, because he's just a man in a metal suit, that the armor would just break. But, you know, this is comics. You got to let some things go. So, but he's badly damaged. He needs repair. In a side note, we're introduced to Tony Stark's new security guard, Beth Cabe. I think that's her. Excuse me. I'll get the name at the very end.
Bethany Cabe.
Yes, she's Tony Stark Resilience new security enforcer. She's in charge of keeping Stark Resilient people alive.
Is she sexy?
The thing is with it, and this is my issue with the art, if Pepper Potts didn't have her hair in a ponytail, you couldn't tell who they were, and wasn't in the iron in the rescue suit, you couldn't tell who it was. They're both redheads and they're both attractive looking, you know, then but you could tell who she is. She has a different attitude than Pepper, but so she's back, and that obviously caught, like, the first time they see Pepper and her see each other, it's, oh, you know, sort of the, you know, girlfriends seeing each other, one's an ex, and even though they aren't currently dating, they have a thing for each other. So at the end, Tony Stark has, like, you know, Pepper's losing her shit, because she's rescued, she doesn't have any offensive capabilities, but she has to go to individually, and while they don't show it, she's obviously can't handle all the stress. She's trying to deal with it, and Tony is, you know, he comes back from Paris, like, it's a nightmare, it's biblical Pep, it might be a total loss, the whole city, I don't know, and there's something out there waiting for me, and it hit him real hard. You know, he needs to go back to the Avengers, and throughout the scene, and this is the critical moment, there's a bottle of wine there, and it's just sitting there, and you're like, well, why is that there? You don't pay attention at first. Tony Stark goes off. Last page is Iron Man flying away, and Tony's clutching that bottle together, clutching that bottle very hard.
Ooh, that's
which
back to that, huh?
Which to me is an interesting plot turn. And Tony Stark's been sober for a good number of years, and the fact that he's this rattled to go to the bottle. This rattled by something which I find interesting, you know, and maybe I want to know where this goes. I don't think he drinks the bottle, but I'm really interested that he actually went there to at least even touch something like this.
Yeah, you would think he would have done that, you know, after, I don't know, the Skrull invasion.
Yeah, but see, the Skrull invasion.
Yeah, but Casey, this is like an all-out God war going on.
Yeah,
but you know what, though? This isn't the first time that there's been, like, heavy mystical stuff going on in the planet. It's just the first time there's been heavy mystical stuff going on in the planet and a big ass military invasion, you know, happening at the same time. Which,
well, they're
yeah, that's different, but still in all, they've gone through worse. Come on. Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet? Come on.
Wait a second. But also, we also know that the God of Fear has been making people more afraid. And Tony
Stark
is just a man in a metal suit. He's not immune to this.
No, you're right. No, good point.
Which I think,
but
that's
how
the
much
only
of this
reason.
Do you see is actually Tony being affected by the planet-wide fear effect?
Wait, repeat that again. Saying?
How much of this do you think is partly based on Tony Stark being affected by the planet-wide fear effect?
I think this has always been in there because I think it's obviously a new thing that he's kind of bothered by the idea of a god, that he's something he can't explain. But he's been able to hide it. But now with the God of Fear coming out and putting out his power,
I don't know if I buy that, dude. Come on, he's known Herc and Thor for years.
But that doesn't mean he's under, you know, rationalized it. It doesn't mean he hasn't tried to explain it, or he's come to terms with it. You know, I mean. Our time
Buy that. There's been way too much experience, way too many years have passed for him.
Yeah, but he can't explain any of it, and that's probably...
Yeah, but there's lot of shit that Tony Stark classically has not been able to explain. Now, granted, there were different things going on in his life, but to say that this is what's pushed him over,
it's clutched the bottle of wine, and also I think that it's the fear of the God of Fear and of these hammers or whatever it is, and it's infecting him a little bit, you know, however much. I think that has to do with it. I mean, the event is called Fear Itself.
Fair enough.
And he's rattled to the bone with it, whereas Herc and Thor, they're his allies. You know, while he can't rationalize it, he's not going to think anything of it. This thing's trying to kill him, and he can't – there's no reasoning behind it, you know. A rational reason that his mind can understand. Anyways, I give it a 5 out of 5. I'm interested in the next issue. Let's go with Taser, who's actually going to go with Supreme Power, a different book we haven't talked about in a long time.
Supreme Power number 1, volume 2, number 1. I'm not exactly sure where that last Squadron Supreme mini kicked off. Left off, rather, you know, the one where Fury was running around with Enchantress and they ended up leaving and going over to the back to the Ultimate Universe. But in this, we find that Dr. Spectrum, the guy who was a Black Ops military officer, has basically taken over for Hyperion in the role of America's protector. You know, he's got a snazzy new Captain America-esque costume. He's operating all out in the open, and he's, you know, saving planes and, you know, smiling for the cameras. Well, that's a little stretching it, but he's the bright guy now. And we come to find out, and this is news to me. Maybe it happened in another book. I didn't read it, but as far as I'm concerned, it's new. We find out that Mark Spector, Hyperion, apparently snapped and took out the White House, you know, and then, you know, disappeared, you know, cut all ties, and, you know, people are, boo, Hyperion sucks, boo. So, yeah, Dr. Spectrum stepped up because as much as, you know, he doesn't really enjoy the task or the role, who else is going to do it? You know, Spectre's still out there. You know, they don't know where he is. He's been hiding. And, you know, that's where we find ourselves. It's an interesting position, you know. How do you go from, well, it's like Batman. Say, Bruce Wayne is used to doing Batman. He operates in the dark. And then all of a sudden, he's given, like, a Green Lantern ring, you know, or he becomes Superman. Well, he's not really that. These guys don't operate the same thing, so he has to change of venue, you know. He's not operating in the dark, you know, where, you know, whatever access he takes can easily be covered up, and, you know, nobody knows who he is. Here, everybody knows who he is. His name is out there. He doesn't wear a mask, you know. I like this. I thought it was an interesting point to come in, and I've been a fan of this take on Squadron Supreme. This was a good read, you know. I enjoyed this book. I'll give it four warriors out of five. I recommend it.
All right. Well, it's interesting. I will never touch this book again. Not
why not?
Not because I have a certain. I read when JMS did those characters, and that's the voice. I know there was like the Squadron Supreme, you know, with the big color yellow Hyperion, you know.
Yeah.
But the incarnation of Squadron Supreme is what I know from JMS, those characterizations, and I don't want to be soiled. I was already soiled enough when I read Ultimate Power, when Jeff Loeb bastardized Barda, Power Princess, or I can't even remember her name now.
Power Princess.
Yeah, Power Princess. So I will never read another Squadron Supreme book unless it has J. Mark Straczynski's name on there.
Yeah, but, you know, exactly how did he bastardize her? As opposed to JMS, who pretty much laid the groundwork.
Well, when I read it, it wasn't her, you know, the voice I knew, it wasn't her, you know.
Okay.
Like one of the first comic books I ever read. Again, I read a lot of JMS stuff initially, and no surprise, my dad was a huge JMS fan, and that's the voice I knew. But when Jeff Loeb wrote her, not just her, but all the Squadron Supreme, it just felt awkward. It didn't feel right, and so I told myself after that, never again will I not read another Squadron Supreme book not written by JMS. It just won't happen.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Taser, for that review. Now, Brian is actually going to go with Alpha, another Fear Itself tie-in with Alpha Flight number 1 of 8. Take it away, Brian.
This one goes out to Maverick. Okay, so what we get is we pick up not too far from where the one-shot left off. We get to a point where Necrod, who the Breaker of Oceans, Atuma's character, is pretty much gonna wreck the coast of Canada, and we have Alpha Flight helping to evacuate the shorelines, and of course, in the ensuing chaos, all kinds of basically they're trying to battle off Necrod while saving the people. And on top of that, we just see these characters, we get glimpses of them all throughout. We start to see that maybe Aurora, Northstar's sister, is kind of maybe losing her shit again, which, you know, never ends in good ways. What else do we get? We get actually a pretty interesting scene where the Prime Minister of Canada, the guy who was leading the Unity Party in the last issue, he's been elected Prime Minister. And essentially what he does is tying into the whole thing where he's trying to calm his people and all that stuff. He basically installs an emergency act where he takes away all rights. He can arrest pretty much any suspicious person he wants, and he can hold them without bail and for however long he wants. So he basically just took any kind of freedoms anyone has and just kind of raked it in the ass. And on top of that, we get a point at the end of the book where after the team has returned to Department H, they get swarmed by box units from which isn't really in, it doesn't really indicate anything much yet, but it does. Taser explained it earlier to me better, but it involves Madison Jeffries, I think, was it? Or was that someone else?
Yeah,
Madison Jeffries. And Department H, and essentially what we can infer from this is that there are box units going to try and detain Alpha Flight, and not only them, but there's a point where a box unit pretty much breaks into North Star's apartment, and in the process seriously injures his boyfriend, possibly kills him. And off on a whole other side of the world, what we have is the whole Necrod threat was actually lifted in this issue. It was done away with pretty much one issue.
Oh, that was so awesome to see that double page spread, though.
Yeah, it really was. I didn't know that Necrod was that huge, but I guess that's...
Who fucking cares? It was awesome.
I know. But anyway, What we get is we got Omega basically takes this dude and just kind of Guardian. I don't know why I said Omega. Guardian pretty much takes him and teleports him all the way across the world to, or not across the world, over to Newfoundland, which is, I think, up near Greenland or something like that. And essentially what ends up happening is he draws Necrot's blood, but in the process of doing all this, you know, trying to wound a god, he actually gets pretty wiped out himself, and he crash lands on this island. And he recuperates when Vindicator comes. Well, it isn't shown to be Vindicator, but what happens is he gets basically blasted and seriously injured, possibly dead, no one knows, but it turns out to be Vindicator, the one who basically floored him, and it's not an alien. He pretty much goes down the list. He goes, brainwashed? She goes, nope. Alien parasite? Nope. Evil clone? Anything like that? No. And she's like, it's just her, it's really, really her, and she hits him again, and so he's floored. We have Alpha Flight pretty much being taken down, and we have Vindicator possibly betraying the team. And that's all in the first issue of Alpha Flight. Which, admittedly, was a very, very solid issue. Much better than the last issue. The only thing I wish they'd done different was kept the artist from last issue. I wasn't that crazy about the art in this one. And there's just something about it that kind of bugged me. I wish they'd kept the artist from last issue. It seemed to fit a little bit better. But that could have been just me. No, we got Van Lent. Van Lent, of course, is wonderful. Telling a story. And I honestly will picking up the next issue of this because it was much better than the last issue, I thought. And I'm really interested to see where the story goes. I actually care about Canada now. So that's something. And for any of you Puck fans out there, Taser.
Yeah!
There was two little moments in here. One moment was in the comics when basically Gurney was pulling a news reporter from out of a falling chopper. She asked him, where's Puck? Why isn't he on the team? He's coming. He kind of saw it like, you know, doesn't know what to say. And then at the very end of the issue, we see a bunch of concept art drawn up for the comic book, and they actually include Puck in there, saying that if they ever want to use him, now they have concept art to work with for the newly revised Puck. So it's not exactly a confirmation that Puck will be brought back, but they're saying that if given the option, they probably could bring him back. But trying to justify it, I don't think it'll be a very, you know, easy ride. But point is, they're not being shy of the option of bringing Puck back for any of you fans. So
bring back Puck! I miss
No, but actually, I very much enjoyed this issue, and I'll be definitely picking the next one. I actually give it a 4.5 out of 5. All right. It was a very good issue, very solid.
All right, no verses of the week this week. We're going to skip that. But that this does concluding episode number 68 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel podcast. If you want to contact us at thewarriors3@gmail.com. Visit our website, www.thewarriors3.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/warriors3vcast. Be a fan of us on Facebook. Thank you, Arnold, for setting that up for us. We're invading everywhere. Come to your house.
We're
everywhere. We are secretly the Illuminati. Taze is going to be
get your sister ready for us. Yeah. as long as she's 18.
And ladies and gentlemen, that concludes with that awkward Sexual Innuendo concludes episode number 68. We'll see you number 69, where I'll be in my lingerie waiting for you.
69?
Oh, that's just disturbing.
See y'all next week.